Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with Tom Apostoporos, mayor of his city, board of directors of a publicly traded bank, chairman of a publicly traded company, and actor and theater founder. It's an interesting life. Hang on. Here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Essential self, not that person that you think you were supposed to be or that you hoped you were, but the person you really are. It is my belief as a psychotherapist that life is easier, happier, and you know those words, fulfilling and rewarding and all that stuff, when you're not second-guessing yourself, when you're not pretending to be something you're not, when you're not criticizing yourself for what you are, when you're not telling yourself you should be different. But when you are truly embracing who you are and letting that person be. Well, not everyone can do that. You know, as a therapist, I think few people do it. And in fact, it is the reason that a lot of people come into therapy, because they feel out of sync. Or they're trying to get themselves to be something they're not because they've decided that something they are is not okay. And, of course, I am a psychotherapist who does all of her work on the telephone and has been doing that for, I don't know, 15 years now. So if you're interested in psychotherapy on the telephone, or if you're interested in learning what I think about how we become people who are not who we really are, how that happens to us, and how you can know if that's happening to you and what you can do about it if you want to do something about it. You can get a lot of that information, at least you can get the information from my point of view, on my website, which is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow, thelynnshow.com. And in this show, this is the point I am trying to make, though, that we are not all being who we really are. And in order to make that point, beside saying what I think about it, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because when you listen to people who make a life with an art, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. We make it so difficult for people to be artists in this culture that in order to do it, it actually has to be who you really are. And you can hear it. And it is my hope that when you listen to people who are who they really are, you can hear it and be inspired to ask yourself, am I who I really am? Have I been keeping a part of myself locked away, hidden? Have I been denying a part of myself? Have I been mad at myself for what I think I should not be? And then maybe begin the process of recapturing your whole self so you don't have to be at odds with yourself, so that you can be what therapists call congruent, in sync. Life is so much easier when you are. So on my website, you can also hear all of my shows, all the shows I've ever done, including this one that I am doing right now. And you can hear all the interviews that I have ever done, including the interview that I am about to air. And this is an interview with Tom Apasporis. Tom is a little atypical for my interviews, because Tom started off life as an actor. You can hear him talk about his first grade experience and his fifth grade training. But he took a big detour, which people quite often have to do. It's an interesting story because while he took a detour, which is to say he spent many years not being an actor, he credits all the success he had at all these other careers to the training he had as an actor. And finally, he has been able to recapture his initial dream and is acting and is running a theater company. So you can hear when you listen to Tom that although he veered somewhat in his career choice, he never veered from his essence, which is a performer. And it's a long interview, and I didn't want to cut any more of it than I had to, so I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm simply going to turn the microphone over to Tom. Here he is. So I'm here with Tom Apasporis, and I'm explaining to Tom that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and I know that you make at least some of your life, perhaps some of your living, I'm not sure exactly what, with acting, with theater. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So I only ask one question, and that is, do you remember, can you pinpoint the very first moment in your life when you thought that it would be fun to perform, to speak, to be on stage, to entertain, to any of that? Do you?
Yes.
Oh, good. Can you tell?
Sure. It would probably be between the first grade.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the fifth grade, probably more prominent or more dominant a determination around the fifth grade, around the age of 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated with the idea of performing, and my mother and father, who were quite helpful, maybe the word is indulgent, to both my brother and I, to what it is we wanted to do with our lives, were more than willing to allow me to get some training as an actor.
Well, okay, back up just a little bit, because by the time you're thinking about wanting to get some training as an actor, you've already got some idea about what acting is.
And that's why I said sometime between the first grade and the fifth grade, because it was around the time I was a fifth grader that I began to be trained. It was probably the first grade when I think I first performed in a play that I suspect the seed was planted.
Do you remember the play?
I'm not sure I remember the play. I remember playing a planet. So it actually may have been a play written by my first grade teacher, mm-hmm. or a play available to her. And I think I was the planet Mercury, and my responsibility was to tell the audience all about my planet.
Great.
Me, all about me is the planet Mercury.
Okay, so you do remember that you were the planet, you were the planet Mercury, you were telling the audience, and that you liked it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And probably, though, to be wholly honest, probably was a little anxious about it, because mm-hmm. I think that is still true in me today, although I don't show my anxiety acting the way some people do. You know, some people will get ill.
Ill, I know.
That doesn't happen to me, and people have commented that that doesn't appear to happen to me, and my response is, I think that we deal with that anxiety in different ways. I think some of us always have it simmering in us, and others may have it
exploding, right.
Exactly.
Okay, so do you remember being anxious about the planet thing?
It's funny how our memories work.
Mm.
I could be imagining now, all these years later, that I was anxious because I do get anxious today,
yeah.
when I'm going on stage. And I don't remember a time when I didn't. Again, in me, it kind of simmers underneath. It doesn't explode. But I have to believe that that aspect of me has always been there, going all the way back to that first occasion.
Okay, so first grade, you're a planet. Does anything else happen? Do you see movies? Do they take you to the theater? Do your parents say, hooray, that was great? What is it that leads to the culmination in the fifth grade where you say, I want to do this?
Well, I don't know that this is true of me, but I've learned that some people who are on stage or on film or in front of audiences of any kind tend to be not necessarily the most able people in an interpersonal relationship, a conversation, may actually be shy, mm-hmm. and something happens to them in the environment of theater,
mm-hmm.
just use theater as the example, not film, but theater, that enables them to overcome that. Now, that's not something I deal with. I have been had to be a public speaker because of several things that I've done.
Oh, okay,
in my
life. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves here. So go back and say, because what I think is that you don't actually know what happened between the first and the fifth grade.
Oh, I'm not saying that I do. Yeah.
Yeah, no. So, but it's interesting. So we have this very powerful experience of the planet, and then 4 years later, you know that this is something you want to do, and it's just interesting that we can't see.
Well, but you see, I'm not sure that I'm saying that, because in that intervening four-year period, one is in grade school, one is periodically, maybe there are other theatrical productions that I don't remember, but one is asked to stand up and answer a question in class, mm-hmm. one is asked to make a speech, and a lot of these tools that one has to develop
right.
relate very much to...
To performance.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Okay, so here we have you at fifth grade, and you say essentially to your parents, I want to study acting, and they say, fine. Yes. So where do you study?
Well, in my case, I was able to find instructors locally. I'm from Poughkeepsie, New York, and there were studios there that taught dance, taught acting, gymnastics even, and in in one instance, I was able to take 2 or 3 years, not full years, of course, but like the school year, mm-hmm. Of weekly acting classes with people who were quite talented in the field, quite renowned, actually. One instructor had, I think, was the first artistic director of Vassar College's Powerhouse Theater. Another was a professor of theater at Bard College in northern Dutchess County. And yet another was a professor of theater at one of the other large colleges in the area. So I was really blessed mm-hmm. at being able to very inexpensively
and very young
be trained mm-hmm. by really capable, talented individuals. And that is something that I was fortunate in my life to experience for that several year period from the fifth grade and into college.
Wow.
And have wonderful professors of theater in college who were positioning me to work, if I wished to, as a professional actor.
Okay, so you went to college and studied acting in college?
A little bit. It was not a major.
Ah.
It was not a theater major.
So I'm just curious. So at some point, however much you loved acting and the theater, you decided not to major in it because you decided not to try and make it a life? Or because it was something else you wanted to do? Or because they told you you had to have something to back up?
Well, I don't know that anyone ever told me that, but I think I may have evolved to that on my own. But as far as I'm concerned, everything that I've been able to do in my life, acting and in addition to acting, I can track back to that initial training. Mm-hmm. And I can see elements of that in everything that I've done all of my life, whether it has been related to playing a role on stage, playing a role on film, or making a speech, or making a business presentation.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. Okay, so what did you major in?
Well, one of my degrees, it's the only one that I ever mention, because it's just an associate in arts degree, is simply a liberal arts humanities degree, just a broad-based general education, mm-hmm. we'll call it. I went on from there to become a history major, intending to teach history, and never really fully got there. And then, ironically, only because I had a wonderful career that was advancing me very, very rapidly as a young man, I ended up with credits toward a master's of public administration. But the reason I stop at the associate degree is because it's the only thing that I can claim was complete. The rest of it is just this eclectic jumble of
I took some courses here, I went there for
what
a while, like that.
What did I want to be? And of course, at the age of 20, I was acting pretty much professionally and concluded that I should probably go into business because my father was in business, and I wasn't sure about the stability of earning a living as an actor. And then 5 years after I went into business, I was asked to run for public office, and I did. And
like yet another performance.
Elected. That's kind of my point about that common thread.
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up in public office at a very young age, ended up retiring from public life at a very young age, and that had immediately positioned me to become a corporate person. I ended up part of a board of directors of a bank that was publicly traded, and I ended up chairman of the public company a couple of years later. And that's my point about being able to track every single step
right.
back to that beginning. And what was that beginning? But whether I'm a shy person or not doesn't really matter. What matters is that all the way back, I had somehow concluded that there was a value or a desire or a likeness to to do this performance kind of thing, and what that positioned me to be able to do is everything I've done in my life since then.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. So, so you had all of these careers. I mean, you had the businessman, you had the public office, you had the corporate guy, and in all that time, did you do any acting, or?
Well, let's understand the slight difference in values from as I was growing up to where we are now. When I was elected, I can tell you that in my first election to public office in Poughkeepsie, in a theater program for a play that I was performing in cabaret theater, I was playing the role of Murray Burns in 1,000 Clowns, and that theater biography actually refers to the fact that I've just announced my candidacy to run for a seat on the city council in Poughkeepsie, New York. And I was elected to that seat, and 2 years later I was elected mayor. That's the 1980s. 1977, I think I was first elected, and then 1979 I was elected mayor. That was not a time in which one would get many points for being an actor.
Yeah. No.
And now, you know, years later, and not, it's we're talking about the end of the 1980s, who becomes president of the United States, but Ronald Reagan.
An actor, right.
You know, who, whatever one believes of President Reagan's, you know, political philosophy or governmental philosophy, the fact of the matter is he was a great communicator and used a lot of the abilities that an actor possesses to...
It's what you were saying.
...be very effective.
Right, about
exactly.
that training
exactly.
served him.
So, but until that period of time, I did do a lot of uncredited voice work. Mm-hmm. I remember narrating some industrial films. I remember narrating some historical films, the kind of thing that today you would see on the History Channel. And in some cases I think I did receive credit for it, but in many cases I didn't want to receive credit for it because I didn't want the people of my community to say, we've elected an actor.
Right.
Because they had every right to say, we've elected a business person, which is what they did say, because by that time I'd become
a business person. Yes, you had a lot of business credits.
Exactly.
Right, wow. Okay, so you're city council and then you're mayor, and then you're a corporate?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
you're a banker and you're a, right? Okay, good. So when you're a corporate, can you be an actor or still can't be an actor?
You know, I have to tell you that... because it was a public company, because it was a banking company, because at the end of the 1980s, around 1990, we suffered a banking crisis, much like what we've just gotten
what
through.
What was going to come.
Yeah. And coincidentally, I became active with that responsibility at that time, and because I had nothing to do with the creation of any of those issues, and because of skill that I had developed as a public speaker, as a public office holder, my colleagues looked to me to, if not lead, certainly help lead out of this
mess
because of the fact that, number one, I wasn't responsible for creating it, and number two,
you had all those skills.
I had a skill set that could be very
useful. Right, right. You were incredibly well positioned
and
for that.
And I chaired a public meeting, a shareholders meeting, and I remember people on the board of directors with me who were all wonderful, supportive people. And again, none of them, even though they may have been around, were responsible for what was happening. What was happening was created by, unlike the last crisis, most of this was created by an economic condition, not self-dealing. There was some of that, but it wasn't with the institution that I was involved in, or I never would have succeeded. What we've experienced recently, though, was that there were people self-dealing. That's
right.
Not what the 1980s, 91 crisis was necessarily about. But I chaired a shareholders meeting, and I remember getting through that evening by refusing to accept the advice of our legal counsel who were present because I didn't believe their judgments were correct. Remember that I'd then, by then, served 10 years in public office, and I also understood how an audience reacts to things, and I understood the anger of shareholders. And so I was moving against legal advice and literally recessed a meeting and went to meet with the directors of the company who were in the room and said, if I do what I'm being advised to do, I think I make a terrible mistake, and if I make that mistake, I'm making it on all our behalves, and I don't want to do it. And one person said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to confront the issues. I want to not be heavy-handed about voting proxies. I want to argue in a polite way my way through this evening. And that man looked at me and he said, I have followed your career as a public official, and I side with you, and he proceeded to walk out of the room. At that point, all of the other board members simply looked at each other and said, okay, it's up to Tom. And it worked. And my point to you is that judgment was made because that gentleman had seen me operate in 10 years of local government, which is probably a harder level of local of government to work in than the higher levels that we all know exist. But I'm telling you that I think it's those talents that I was able to accumulate going back to that.
I'm sure you're right. No, I'm sure you're right. Okay, so does this come to some kind of conclusion, some end? Do you stop being this public person?
Well, not necessarily. You know, everything that we've talked about was New York-based, and we're in Florida.
Right.
And so we moved to Florida in 1997. I still had a lot of ties to New York then, but physically we moved here.
Well, I want to ask a question before you say that. So before 1997, when you moved, did you go back to acting at all?
Only what I've described to you, which is
your voiceovers and things like that.
Uncredited work,
right.
Mainly. I once got a wonderful review for a production. It was a Shakespearean production, and I was literally a recorded voice in what I guess was a train wreck of a production, because when I read the review months later, I'd forgotten, not completely, obviously I remembered having done the voice
right,
work,
right.
But I'd forgotten the project.
Right.
And suddenly I'm reading about the project, and the reviewer is talking about this voice and anticipating just a marvelous production, and it was a train wreck.
Oh.
Ultimately in that review.
Right.
And I never even met the cast. I was tape recorded. Did the recording in I think one take, and it was that to that reviewer.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was good or not, you know, to that reviewer it was. The point is, that's the kind of thing that I was doing, and until 1997, I wasn't getting back up on the kind of stage I was on for Time Stand Still. Most recently, it was a different kind of a stage.
Right.
But in the late 90s, actually in the early 2000s more specifically, I once again began acting in a fairly formal and intense way.
Mm-hmm.
But times have changed. I'd held a seat as a city commissioner on Anna Maria Island. I had chaired the Charter Review Commission there.
So you continued to do this public policy
absolutely.
Kind of work?
Absolutely.
Okay. And you did or didn't pursue the acting at the same time?
Since 1997, it's not because it's 1997, that's almost irrelevant. Let's just call the second chapter of my involvement in the theater, there's no reservation about mixing
yes.
professions.
Right.
There was that, and maybe it was foolish on my part. I think it might have also been a kind of a schedule thing, too. You know,
yeah, well,
the
I mean,
intensity
you, have to, you
of working,
can't go. You can't say to the board meeting, "I'm sorry, now I have to go to rehearsal."
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But today, I mean, for example, you know, I have a lot of public life responsibilities today that are and business responsibilities that are not related to the theater, and when I was working with the Banyan Theater Company in Time Stand Still, and there is a 2.5 to 3 week rehearsal schedule, and the hours of rehearsal are dictated by the vote of the Actors' Equity members, there was a point at which I had to say, you know, this will be a straight 6 rehearsal schedule, which means from noon to 6 every day, I'm out of business, out of government to the extent I'm still in it peripherally, and I'm occupied with theater. And then when the performance run begins, it actually becomes easier because
yeah.
now...
And you just have to show up at night.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and for a matinee once mm-hmm. a week. So it still has the practical problem, but it doesn't have... I don't think people now say... Someone who's been trained in the theater shouldn't be president of the United States. Thanks
right.
to President, you know, Reagan.
Reagan
and
right.
again, not this isn't a discussion about political philosophy. It's just a discussion about the reality
oh, no, absolutely.
Of people who President Obama is an extraordinary orator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is.
And that's there is theater in that ability.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he ever had that training, I don't know. I suspect, as a man who was trained to be an attorney, there is some training that he received,
mm-hmm.
Minor training that he received along the way. I don't know that, but I can see how practical that would be.
Yeah. Okay, so you clearly define yourself as an actor in addition to the other ways you define yourself. That's accurate, right?
That is accurate.
Mm-hmm. And are you wanting to do more theater?
I don't know. Because of what we talked about early on, that anxiousness, I have worked pretty steadily for a number of years now with both community theater and professional theater. Creating a theater company, Theater Odyssey, being able to perform, being able to direct, or being able to simply act as an administrator, kind of a producer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I have noticed that some actors, as they get older, tend to want to move toward directing, and I don't know whether that's because... It's not easier, but I don't know whether that's because they've concluded that it is easier than memorizing lines.
I was just going to say, you don't have to learn lines.
Which is, but otherwise, I mean, you're responsible for
everything.
So I'm fortunate in that when I perform, the reaction is more positive than negative. And there is an ego gratification that comes from that, much like I'm sure there's an ego gratification that, since we've used President Reagan and now President Obama as examples, there must be an ego gratification, must have been for President Reagan and must be for President Obama, a gratification when they deliver an extraordinary speech and and change the course of history, it must make them feel really good, right?
And
so, you know, the same thing is true when you are on stage and you take your bow and the audience is generous with you, and then you read a review and the reviewer is generous with you. There are similarities. What is that expression? Attaboy? There are similarities to attaboys for whatever it is we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate in that an attaboy for me in the business world, an attaboy for me in the public world, an attaboy for me writing columns now or acting on stage, they're really all equivalent. Mm-hmm. They're all positive reinforcements of me, mm-hmm. and what I would like to be, and hopefully my image of what I am is not too terribly different from the outsider's image of me. But, I'm constantly amazed at people who do appear to be living in completely a different world than the world that is around them. I don't want to be that way myself, because I don't think that's a positive. I think I can understand concentration on the importance of that, but and how you may want to become inwardly directed for a while as you're developing that. But the reality is that I would like not to think I'm doing a great job when the rest of the world out there is saying, "You're really doing a lousy job." I'd rather be questioning whether I'm doing an adequate enough job and have someone honestly applaud me or praise me, and not just...
You want to be objective.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So,
and at the same time that you want to be objective, you value the pleasure of attaboy.
Yeah, that, and again, I mentioned earlier that I learned a long time ago that sometimes people who, have some feeling, have some lacking of self-confidence and have, and maybe a bit shy, that the theater is important to them because it enables them to kind of get beyond that. And I don't know that I may have been a shy person when I was younger. I don't remember being told that. I do remember being regarded sometimes by my teachers as being quiet, which may have been an aspect of being somewhat shy. Mm-hmm. Today, with a lot behind me that I could point to that says...
Attaboy.
Yeah. I question myself a lot and try to be careful about my conclusions, try to be careful about my statements, try to listen and try to respond kindly and in a constructive way. And I'd like to think that period of, if it was shyness or if it was quiet, it was a period of listening, and then as time went on, my own confidence level increased, and suddenly, instead of being uncomfortable speaking or saying, expressing an opinion, I became more confident that I could carry that moment. And again, that would be a result of theater training, to evolve to the point of being able to carry a moment on an important subject or in an important scene.
Do you want to say something about Theater Odyssey?
Well, sure. It came about in 2006. It was the accumulated thinking of largely members of the cast of a play called Metamorphosis. It was the hand-picked cast of the artistic director of Manatee Players, and he mounted that production in order to go after a national award And he achieved it. And it's the only time to date in the history of the state of Florida that a community theater in Florida has won this national award.
Wow.
And it won a slew of them on every level, on the state level, on the regional level, and then on the national level, including the coveted best production. So many of us who were involved had had periods of our lives in which we'd been professionally involved in the theater or in film, in a couple of instances. We were all together for about a year, you know, with that production, and began to talk about a way of carrying this on. And out of that came the idea of producing plays that were locally created, local playwrights, their work, and we wanted to do something a little simpler than major production, so short plays were a choice. And we created the company intending to do a whole number of things, but the initial focus was 10-minute plays, a festival of 10-minute plays, written by local playwrights, adjudicated, resulting in a Best Play Award, mm-hmm. but full productions of these plays. Now that was in 2006, and at the time, and still today, some people think 10-minute play, that's really a new concept. Mm-hmm. And I actually, in an interview like this, someone credited me with creating the 10-minute play, and I said, I deserve no credit. I picked up anthologies of 10-minute plays at one of these theater festivals where we were performing Metamorphosis. There were always displays of books on theater, and publishers were there. Dramatist Play Service was represented. You could buy books on direction, on acting, and you could buy plays. Mm-hmm. And I remember picking up, and believe I still have today, two 10-minute play anthologies that I bought at one of those festivals, and actually went back to this group of people that I was talking with constantly about this idea that we all had. What if we produced these 10-minute plays? And then we decided, well, we won't produce these 10-minute plays. We'll get 10-minute mm-hmm. plays. And the beauty of Theater Odyssey is there are actually two volumes of our 10-minute plays available for sale right now.
Wow.
From 2006 through 2009 and from 2010 through 2013. And we've produced approximately 70 new works over an 8-year period. Four of those plays, as a direct result of our efforts, have been picked up by major publishers and appear in major anthologies and are produced all over the world.
Wow.
I see plays, at least one play, if not two, that we first produced here in Sarasota, Florida. I can see it on YouTube if I want to, being produced in Australia.
Wow.
New Zealand, Europe. One of our volumes recently, we had two volumes sell in 1 month. And both of them, one was in Europe and one was in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
You know, so we accomplished something really unique, but our aim was to produce plays from local playwrights, award them, confer upon them a best play designation and a cash award, and the ability to publish their play. And of course, we publish all of the plays we produce, we're willing to publish. We have a very stringent selection process for those plays, and all of our performers, all of the members of our crews, all of our directors, everyone is paid. It's a profit-sharing company. In that regard, it is a professional company. It's not an equity-based company. We're not able to pay at that level, but it is a professional company in the sense that we are, in fact, compensating our performers. And there is, in fact, at least one writer, maybe two. Some years there's a best play and there's a runner-up play, and there are cash awards. This year, 2013, was the first year that we actually created a student 10-minute play writing festival, the theory being that we should go to the schools, high schools in particular, and solicit work, because if they're not writing plays, they should be. especially 10-minute plays, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's not easy to create a beginning, a middle, and an end in 10 minutes. But if you can create a beginning, a middle, and an end in 10 minutes, you probably can create it.
You can write a play.
Right, exactly. So we think it's, and we have on our board of directors a couple of individuals who are teachers and involved in the theater themselves. And so that's been a wonderful opportunity for us to take the company into another area. And so when we produce our student 10-minute playwriting festival in January of 2014 and our 10-minute play festival for, I'll say, the older folks, mm-hmm. Although students could certainly enter plays into that competition as well, that happens more in the spring, you know, more towards summer, we'll be doing this for the ninth year.
Wow.
The student playwriting festival for the second year, but the 10-minute play festival for the ninth year.
Okay, and didn't you tell me that you are in doing a reading?
Yeah. There's a play that was a best play recipient in a local theater competition a few years ago, and I was ultimately cast in the full production of that play. That playwright has rewritten that play and is moving it to a whole other level, and that play will be read again in November, and I'll be, in a sense, reprising a role that I've performed on stage, mm-hmm. but this time it'll be in a reading of a rewritten version of that original play. And he is also in front of some New York City producers at this point with the same play, and I'm expected to go to that reading in New York, which I think is in sometime in the month of March. But I'll be doing a lot of work otherwise between now and then.
Different work.
Exactly.
Okay. Is the reading open to the public, or is...
My understanding is it will be. I haven't quite figured out how that's going to work. I have said...
When is it?
It's November 1st and 2nd, and my understanding is it will be at St. Stephen's School, which is in Bradenton. And I believe that Theater Odyssey may actually notify its database of these readings, because the playwright happens coincidentally to have written the 2013 10-minute play festival winner. It's a 10-minute, that's a completely different thing. It's
right,
he wrote a
10-minute right.
play, it's
right.
a comedy,
right.
it's delightful, and...
He's local.
He's a local man, yes. His name is Bernie Iannelli, and mm-hmm. He is the author of this full-length play, which is now called America's Tragic Prince, but was originally called Undaunted. And that's the play that I appeared in, and the newer version of that, which I'll now read here and again apparently in New York in a few months, is retitled America's Tragic Prince.
Well, all right. Okay. I ask another question, a little bit more difficult for me to frame it for you. I usually ask, you know, having spent a life in this art, whatever it is there something that you might say about it? And when I think, when I listen to you, the art to which you have given your life is not so much theater as expression, demonstration, presentation. Do you think that's correct?
Yeah, and remember that presentation only works with the right preparation.
Ah.
So
actually what I would like is, would you talk about that a little bit, about what it was like to have given a life in all of these different ways with essentially the same skill?
I'll tell you a story.
Okay.
That illustrates it, I hope, perfectly. person came to me, knew of my background, had a daughter who wanted to be an actress, teenage daughter, and the question was, would I be willing to just sit down and speak with her?
Right.
I said, sure. So I met and said, do you like to read? Oh, not really. How are your grades in school? Oh, okay. Well, look, you're really going to do well as an actress if you read a lot, because it's a great way to learn. And you know, you're going to need to memorize lines, and one way to memorize lines is to read them over and over again. It just happens. And I'll just tell you that I've met a lot of people who are actors, and they all seem to be quite intelligent. And I don't know that they got good grades in school, but clearly they were interested in learning, because I think that's also an important part of acting. So my recommendation is, if you want to become an actress, think about the hard work that you're going to need to do. And think about whether your ultimate goal is worth that hard work. And when you conclude that the goal is worth the hard work, please, go do the work. Now, I know that that is me. I know that that's how I've lived my life. I still try to learn as much as I can about everything that I can, from the environment to how the car works to the latest trends in business, because there is an application for that knowledge in presentation, whatever the subject matter can be. When I held public office, I would meet with students a lot, high school students, even college students, and they would say they want to be public office holders in their future, and so they would ask me what kind of education they should get. And somebody else in the room would say, well, of course, you get a political science degree. And my response would be, I don't have a political science degree. I don't know that I ever took a course in political science, although I certainly would recommend a course in political science if you want to hold public office. But my advice to you is to learn as much as you can
about everything,
that you can.
Learn as much as you can.
That is what's going to serve you best of all.
Right.
And the same thing is true in the theater. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are certain, you know, life lessons for me that I experienced that I wouldn't give back for, you know, well, maybe I would for all the money in the world. But it would take a lot of money.
Because it isn't necessarily about money for you.
Well, no. My lawyer, when I was in public life, had a wonderful saying about money. He would say, you know, being rich isn't really necessary, but it does make things easier.
Yes.
That was his point of view about it at the time, and he may not even carry that point of view today, because that's a 25-year-old comment. Yeah, it's not all about money, but you know, the interesting thing that I've determined is that if you really do prepare well and you get to the point of being able to present well, the money isn't the largest consideration you have, because that is going to kind of happen for you. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what young people need to know more than anything else, that preparation and that ability to present, you know, if their goal is completely money-based, well, it may be a great way to get them there. And if it's not money based, if it's just wanting to be the best at what they do, it's the same tools. It's the same process.
That's great. I think that's a great place to stop. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
And so there, you're hearing from a man who knows who he is, has always known from the beginning what he needed to do, who he needed to be, what tools he needed to get to do what he needed to do. And you hear in this certainty that he was able to follow his path every single time. Even if he didn't know that this was the path, when it presented itself, he asked himself, yes, no? The answer was yes. He jumped on it. He didn't say, oh, let me think about this. Is it right? Is it wrong? He knew. He was in touch with the essential Tom. And of course, that's the whole message of the Lynn Show, that it is possible to be in touch with the essential you. And as always, I believe that listening to someone like Tom, who always had it, and who was lucky enough, as some are and some aren't, to have this support from the family, it's possible to not need to know where you're going, only to know who you are, so that when a path appears, you know if it's yours. Well, as always, I hope that you got something from this show that you can use, something that intrigued you, some information that you didn't have that you need, or that you want to put on a back burner for another time for when you're going to need it, something that amused you or even annoyed you, something that will bring you back. Because as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night.